Coming up, enjoy this supernatural island getaway filled with polar bears, smoke monsters, and backgammon. It's the most influential network drama of the 2000s, and this is Most Extreme Podcast.
Welcome to Most Extreme Podcast, the show where we discuss and analyze the battle between good and evil that is 2000s pop culture. I'm Brett Ellison.
And I'm Alejandro Joaquin.
And today, well, since this is an audio-only podcast, this show started with both of our, there's a shot of our eyes opening.
Yes.
It's just very dramatic, for sure. But yeah, we're talking Lost today. Alejandro, are you ready for quite a big topic?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had to do basically watch all of Lost within 1 week to prepare for this.
So you hadn't seen the show before, I guess.
I've known of it from friends and family, but not really from watching it myself. I think I was a little late to it because it was what, 2005?
Yeah, something like that. It's a daring topic for us to be doing so big.
Yeah.
But hey, we have two guests. We have our first duo guests with us. Oh, and man, do we have two guests. From slashfilm.com and Trekking Through Time and Space, we have Hawaii Chambui and Jacob Hall. Hey, guys.
Hi, thanks for having us on today, guys.
Hello, I'm here to talk about my childhood.
So Lost is your childhood. That's crazy.
I guess I'll be more specific. It is the transition from childhood to adulthood. Lost begins with me as an innocent high schooler with hopes and dreams. It ends with me at 3 a.m. in the morning wearing my retail uniform, sitting down for the finale of the last season saying, what the absolute hell?
We're going to get into the finale for sure, but that's exciting. So that's interesting. HT, what's sort of your background on Lost? We can get into more of your background in a second, Jacob, for sure.
Well, mine was also the adolescence of my life. It was a show that I started watching with my family, actually. My parents and I got together Sunday night, started to watch Lost together, and it became a formative part of my high school years and some of my high school friendships too. I'm going to sound super nerdy, super dorky rather, is that, and say that when the finale aired, my friends and I who watched Lost together, maybe I shouldn't say this actually. It sounds really terrible. Sounds really dorky.
Hey, so you need to say this now. If you don't say this, I'm never going to stop hounding you about this.
We got masking tape. And we wrapped it around our fingers like Charlie does in Lost.
That's awesome.
Fate. We wore black that day because we were really cool kids. Anyways, I was really attached to Lost.
Just made Lost t-shirts and wore them all day.
You know, HG, yeah. As somebody who dragged a towel to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy movie in 2005, because I was so excited, and felt like such an idiot when the movie wasn't very good, and I felt so stupid sitting there holding my towel, I've long learned that if you don't dress up or like use props for the things you love, they can't hurt you as much.
They can't hurt you. Your love for the thing will overcome the badness of it.
Hey, that doesn't go as bad as the local theater near me. When the first Hobbit movie premiered, they had a midnight showing for it. And I asked one of the people I knew who worked there, and I was like, how was it? Was there a lot of cosplaying? What was going on? He said, yeah, there was cosplaying. It was one guy, and he was Gollum. So one person dressed completely with just a loincloth, everything hunched back into the theater, being the only person with cosplay.
Oh. Amazing.
That's just, you could hear the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme hitting. It's amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I remember a Guardians of the Galaxy costume contest at a theater here. I think two people showed up, so they both won. Congratulations, guys.
Good job.
Very nice. So were you both watching it when it was still coming out? So was this something that you looked forward to? Was this like one of your favorite shows?
Yeah, it was one of my favorite shows, and I think to this day it still is. And part of that, I think essential to it, was that week-to-week viewing experience. I don't think there is a show that has been able to replicate since Lost that water cooler type of phenomena of something just leaving on that cliffhanger every week and leaving you buzzing with all the questions and all the potential and all the things that happened and all the things that will happen. And so I watched every week. I think I missed one week in season two and I was devastated. And at the time it was much harder to find the reruns of episodes or episodes after the fact. So I was just, I just didn't know what that episode was for years afterwards. I think it wasn't really worth it anyway, so it was fine. But yeah, and I was the kind who watched every week, went to the forum boards and read all the theories. I read Jeff Jensen's EW recaps. I was addicted to those. They were like 15 pages long and I read them every day. And they were part of like the literature that I read and part of what went to the literature I was interested in at the time too, because he would talk about all the references and the Easter eggs throughout. And I was like, I'm going to read that book because it was in the background of Lost.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a show that was very, very special to me. And I think it's the last time that I think we all kind of came together for such a big cultural event. And was that watershed moment that had then became kind of the prelude to the end of the golden age of TV in some cases, at least before streaming hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially now with streaming where they release a whole season at once. Mm-hmm. And it's just not the same to have the week by week mystery.
Yeah, yeah, we talk about things for 5 seconds now. Like if a show hits Netflix, we talk about it for one weekend and then it's gone until it comes back again the next year. Whereas Lost was a thing where in high school, during the first few seasons, every week it was like day after Lost, was everybody talked about it. We all brainstormed, we all theorized, we all talked. And when I went to college and I had no friends in college, I would go on the forums and also read the Jensen pieces, HG, obsessively. I, to this day, I'll never forget how he managed to reach so far and be so interesting while being so often inaccurate.
But it was always great reading.
It was always great writing. And I don't know how much you want to jump around the timeline here, Lost-wise, but can we talk about season three's war with Heroes?
Yeah, I was going to mention Heroes in a second because it was very much like, this is a very similar show.
Because I have such vivid memories. My first year at in art school, being powerfully lonely and leaning on Lost, and how famously the first chunk of Lost season three is a little slow. It's people sitting in polar bear cages for ages and ages. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, there's this new show, Heroes, to come on. Everybody's like, oh my God, is Heroes a new Lost? Why even bother with this Lost show anymore when there's Heroes? It's so much is happening so quickly. And the Heroes versus Lost war was really intense online for about six months. And then when we get to that ending, not Penny's boat versus the worst superhero fight in TV history. And it was phenomenal to watch the Rocky 3 story of Clubber Lang in the form of Heroes arriving and punching Lost down, then Lost getting back up and just destroying Heroes in the home stretch. I mean, I think Lost season 3 is Rocky 3? I mean, in a nutshell, right?
Right. Yeah. That's a great way of putting it.
I actually almost forgot about the whole Heroes versus Lost feud because I remember getting really into both shows. And of course, Lost was number one in my heart, but I did fall for Heroes for a little bit. It was like that sexy new genre show. And after the first season, it just went so, so downhill. I feel like I blocked it out because I was so disappointed in how that show went out. The first season was great until that finale that you spoke of. And then it just kind of tanked from there. Really should have stuck as a mini series, but Lost, even with its high highs and its immense dips, still like maintained that spot. I never had that pushing away that I did with Heroes, as I did with Lost. Well, that makes sense.
Did you have the DVDs, HG? Because we obsessively bought the DVDs, and our ritual, my family and my friends, would be, but for the next season, we wouldn't just watch the previous season. We would watch the entire series up at that point on DVD.
Wow.
So it was like season two, we watched season one. For season three, we watched season one and two. All up to the final season, we watched seasons 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. The amount, I feel like when you're able to just hit play on streaming service, it's not that shows aren't good, but the effort involved in getting up every four episodes and swapping out that disc and knowing that disc six always had one episode, so you had 1 hour of couch time to stand up again. Children these days do not understand what it meant to binge things on DVD and to spend $60 on a box set that unfurled to be 6 feet long and then start getting worn very quickly because you're unfurling it a lot. You have to find room for it. I love DVDs and I love physical media, but that's also because I'm nostalgic for the work it required, man. It is like manual labor. I loved it.
It does require the work. It doesn't make you into a zombie that can just keep watching something until the button comes up and it says, are you still watching? Or are you catatonic? Like, we know you are. And then you just press okay and it keeps going. So I agree with you, but I'm ashamed to say I didn't own the DVDs. I didn't actually do a rewatch of Lost until it hit Hulu on streaming. And I just went through and rewatched it. But yeah, it's a, I guess, I don't know. I actually haven't done like a full rewatch of Lost. Actually, I've only rewatched key episodes, and then I several months ago, I did a guest spot on the Storm podcast with Joanna Robinson. Shout out to that to talk about Lost season three episode. The finale that we just talked about through the Looking Glass, and I did a binge of all the episodes to that moment, and that was the first time that I really truly binge Lost. Like, I hold so precious that week to week experience and the memory of that, and sort of that genuine visceral reaction I had after every episode, that I don't want to, you know, I don't want to retread it by doing a full rewatch. And I feel like doing that rewatch, that binge, was just kind of like, oh, it feels like that show that was meant to be watched week to week, and I could feel like there's some parts that I was like, oh, I could skip through this, but so it wasn't as special as I remembered it being, but I still hold it very special. Continue.
Oh yeah, I just have a question for Alejandro then. Basically, I want to take what HD said and spin it toward Alejandro. So you just said you've watched Lost for the first time, right?
I watched it in parts, but I did watch, like, and, you know, watched all the recaps. So it all came at me at once, basically.
All right, so here's my question. Yeah. Watching Lost week by week and having the space between episodes to overthink everything to the point where it was impossible not to be let down at some point. Since you watched it on Fast Forward, you didn't have room to overthink it. How did you feel about certain mysteries? Like, was it satisfying to you?
To be honest, it just felt like, it didn't feel random, but it just felt like a lot. Like, you're coming with this mystery, and then you have the people, the others, and then you realize, oh, the others are this thing, and then you realize, wait, what are the smoke monsters? And then they explain to you what they are, and then the life and the twin, the brothers, and then so you just are left with kind of like a so what kind of feeling.
Good point.
Where you're just wondering, like, okay, so the whole point of this was, you know, to do this. So it definitely was a little bit overwhelming. I definitely would have liked it a lot as I like watching it in real time week by week. But it also makes you feel that, like, they kind of didn't really know the answers to everything at the beginning.
Right. Yeah.
But they definitely, like, you know, tried to do a lot with the show, which was interesting.
So that's a big question then, isn't it? Like, Breaking Bad, famously not planned out. They wrote the first episode of the final season where there's a machine gun in a trunk, and they didn't know where the machine gun was going to go. They said, we had to mix up as we go, and they did, and they pulled it off. So I'm a big believer that overarching plans are often total nonsense and often can be you find better stories in the moment, like Battlestar Galactica, on their show that made itself up as it went along, I think, for the better. That's the question: is it, would Lost have been better if in season one they had a plan, like, for how for the final scene? HT, I know you're a big fan of the finale.
Yeah, I wrote a whole piece defending it. It was one of my first assignments under you, Jacob. I remember that because I was talking about it, and you're like, write a piece about it, and I was like, okay.
I couldn't stand to look at you as you told me you loved the finale, so I said, go write about it instead.
I I love the finale, and I still do.
I think it's maybe the most divisive.
Yes.
Between the fans finale of anything. Not like, because like Game of Thrones, for example, is one where it just seems like everybody hates it, but it's like in a different way where it feels more fanficky, where like Lost is like, I've talked to like half the people and they love it, half the people and they're like, it's the worst ending ever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my argument came down to, it kind of comes down to that sort of like organic storytelling versus the planned out storytelling too, because I don't believe that Lost in the end was about the mysteries. It was about the characters. At least that's what it ended up finding throughout the course of the series. It found that the characters were the one that really drove the story, that really drove why people were watching it. And that's why whatever happened to them at the end, whether they were in purgatory or whatever, it didn't matter except for the journeys and the emotional resonance of the journeys. Mm-hmm. And I had this whole galaxy brain take too that I'm going to stand by, which is that Lost isn't a sci-fi show, it's a fantasy show. Okay. And thus, because of that, it is not restricted to the more rigid rules that sci-fi requires of its stories. It's something that can play with the boundaries of reality and fiction more, because it's a show that it's a show that isn't about like the sci-fi, isn't about the mystery. So because of that, it's just kind of, it's a little bit more fluid in that way. So that's my take on Lost. I think I actually compared it to, because I had just finished reading 1Q84 by Haruki Murakami.
Okay.
And I was like, this is kind of what watching Lost is like, is that you go in expecting a sci-fi show, but in the end it becomes something so much weirder and more fluid and less rigid than what you would expect it to be. And that's what I applied to my galaxy brained read of Lost.
Counterpoint, HT.
Is I'm wrong, but I'm not wrong.
Is that final season is terrible. The entire final season is bad. And my whole thing is, I'm not going to say it ruins the whole show for me. Lost are my favorite shows of all time. Those first five seasons are unimpeachably great to me. They're wild, they're emotional, they're creative, they take big swings, it's a great cast of actors being given great characters. I think the fourth episode, Walkabout, or the reveal that John Locke is in a wheelchair, maybe the single greatest TV reveal of all time. I've never been sold harder on a show that was in that moment.
Nothing of the best hours of TV.
Yeah. I was gonna say, there's a Slash Film article by Raphael Mortimer on the same topic.
But there's nothing to take that away. I'm not going to say Lost is ruined because I hate the ending, because I really hate the ending. One of the very first articles I ever wrote professionally for Sci-Fi Squad, RIP for like 10 years, was about how the second to last episode, the flashback for the smoke monster and his family, is a true mess, and how it's like, we're this close to the end and you're hitting pause to like talk about this. And the solution, the backstory of these characters, of this mystery is, who knows? But she's right though. It is about the characters, and I just also have a hard time dealing with a final season where they say, "Oh wait, we have too many characters. Let's just drown them in a submarine."
Let's drown them in a submarine. Let's drive one of them crazy and turn them into a mother who has a squirrel baby.
Right.
Saeed into a zombie? Yes, Saeed is a zombie. Let's bring Hiroyuki Sanada in and give him absolutely nothing to do. Yes, I actually agree with you. I dislike a lot of the parts of season six, but I will stand by. I like the finale at least, even if the overall season is pretty trash.
I guess we should say spoilers for Lost. This is not a good time. If you've never seen Lost, this is not the right time to walk. Yeah. Check it out.
I was going to ask for Jacob and HT, like reading the forums and reading the theories, were any of the theories actually crazier than what happened on the show, or were they pretty much on the same level? Remember any of them.
They were always crazier, but I don't remember.
Because they were pretty crazy, like the answers on the show, I think.
I remember hearing one theory that, I can't remember which character it was, one of the scientists was Odin, and the whole thing was about how the creation of Norse mythology, but in the future. And it was, and it held water. It held actual water. I'm like, oh my God, it's Lost, but about the creation of the Norse pantheon. You know, that's the one that stands out to me. It's one that I still vividly remember.
It just connects to Thor.
Yeah, MCU. what if in Robert Eggers' new film, The Northman, we all of a sudden see like the Dharma Initiative logo? We're like, what?
Yeah.
That's where the polar bear came from.
Oh, exactly.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I can't remember any off the top of my head, but I do remember there was a whole thing that Jeff Jensen did about Battleship Down and how and going deep into that. I remember thinking that was really funny. I don't know what it was though.
There,
you guys remember, let me know.
There is that DVD special feature that's Hurley and Ben just like wandering around the island going, oh, polar bears, and trying to fill in the gaps. It's really egregious. I guess I was speaking of Ben and Hurley, the two best characters on Lost. HG said yes immediately that Ben and Hurley being the best too. I feel like everybody has their favorite Lost character, and I guess to anybody else, why is it not Ben and Hurley?
I mean, Hurley is for sure like number one. I have my own favorites. Desmond is my boy, as is Charlie.
Yeah, Desmond.
I'm very predictable. I like the twinks essentially slash the British twink slash the Australian Desmond Australian. I think so. Australian man with his like shirt. Perennially unbuttoned. So I'm very predictable in that way, but I also am a sucker for the romance of some sci-fi and romance and that combination. And Desmond is at the center of my favorite.
I was going to say Desmond gives us pretty David Tennant vibes. So going into Doctor Who, actually, I was literally saying that we should start this episode with me saying, hi, I'm Brett Ellison and I'm a Star Trek fan. And Alejandro saying, I'm not actually, we literally had this conversation. We were like, they have this awesome sci-fi podcast. It's really cool. Let's talk about Doctor Who. And I was like, but I love Doctor Who, but I'm more a Star Trek fan. And you're like, well, I'm more of a Doctor Who fan. And I was like, this is crazy.
In case you don't know what they're talking about, patreon.com/trekkingthroughtimeandspace. Brett and Alejandro, why is somebody else your favorite character and why are you wrong?
For me, it's going to be, I have to say, John Locke, mainly just because getting into the themes of science and faith and him being the science of faith, where Jack's being more of a science, and they have that battle that goes on pretty much throughout the entire show. And I think, like we were saying earlier, his reveal of where you keep hearing, don't tell me what I can't do, and then you see why is he saying that with the reveal of the wheelchair, is literally like one of the moments that, like, if you turned the camera from where where it was happening on the screen to my face, like, jaw dropped, wow, I can't believe they did that. This changes the whole show now that he's going, this wasn't a curse, this was we were supposed to be here.
Yeah. Yeah,
John Locke is one of the all-time tragic characters of TV.
Right, and then his death too is
which is in like the later season, right?
Yeah, season 5, I think.
Yeah,
yeah.
I would say that's pretty much it too, because it's when I watched it speed running, it's kind of hard because you know some of these characters are gonna die and you know like kind of what they do, so. But I think John Locke, has a pretty interesting backstory that captivated me more than others. But everyone really has some interesting character development. Like Jacob said, it really is more about the characters.
I mean, Linda Lothan said the title Lost doesn't mean the island. It's about the characters. It's
about the characters,
that they were lost before they got there. That's another mind-blown moment.
Yeah, they're lost in both a metaphysical and physical way.
We are the Walking Dead, HT. can we talk about Lindelof?
The ones that broke Ben.
Yeah, let's talk. I definitely want to talk about Lindelof.
Because Lindelof, like, people always like to say Lost was a J.J. Abrams thing, and it wasn't. He was barely involved. He had a credit on there that was like what's the word I'm looking for here? Is she what we're looking for when they say, we want to make sure you feel important, so here's a credit, but then they walk away from it?
Executive producer.
At the same time.
Vanity credit is what I'm looking for. Yeah. Like, executive producer on TV can mean a lot of things, so it can be confusing. But, I mean, the story is that there's this young guy, Damon Lindelof, who gets brought on to this ABC show called Lost, and they've already put a lot of money into developing it, working on it. It was meant to be like a Survivor of the series, where people were lost on Desert Island. And previous people who worked on it left, and they had a lot of balls rolling, so we need to get this thing going fast. And they heard this pitch from this young guy, Damon Lindelof, and they said, oh, wow, you are incredibly promising. You have great ideas, but you're also incredibly untested. Here's Carlton Cuse, a veteran TV producer who worked on a lot of things. He's worked a lot of things since. To make sure you know how to keep things on budget, how to run a writer's room. And I just want to talk about how the miraculous pairing of the untapped youthful energy of Lindelof and the real steady hand, the guy who knows how to actually run a TV show of Carlton Cuse, produced some actual magic. Two guys who would never work together before, thrust together by ABC, made Lost. And that's kind of an amazing story.
Yeah.
It's also interesting because the other shows that came out around this time in 2004, in terms of the beginning of the fall season, were Desperate Housewives and Grey's Anatomy.
Wow.
And as I'm younger than some of you, but the show that I remember watching around 2004 on ABC was Extreme Makeover Home Edition. And the amount of commercials that were like, watch the season finale of Lost. And I'm like, oh, man, what's that show?
When was Sex in the City? Was that later?
No, that was earlier.
Earlier.
Back in the 90s, HBO, even.
Yeah.
Because I remember that being a big cultural thing.
Lost was a big, big... I said before watershed moment, but I don't think it can be stressed how important it was in terms of just the serialization of primetime TV and turning that into a big pop culture thing, because, you know, it was Desperate Housewives before, it was Grey's Anatomy. It was stuff that was either on the more soap opera side or on the more sitcom side, nothing as ambitious or big and with as wild swings as Lost, and so genre driven too. There's nothing really like as big as that on a primetime network like ABC until Lost. And then suddenly there was a whole wave of Lost knockoffs right after
that. Like
flash forward.
Yeah, beat me to it. I was going to say that The Event is one that reminds me of. Yeah.
So yeah, it was definitely, it came out of nowhere. And I remember when I watched it, I saw the trailers for it, I think. And I was like, that looks like Survivor, but the TV show. And then I watched the pilot and was completely blown away. So it was obviously not that. But yeah, what a miracle of a show Lost was.
Right. Go ahead.
Could Lost be made in the streaming era? And not just because of, like, you know, it was a product of its time, but because I feel like with these 16 to 24 episode seasons, Lost was able to really effectively say, let's have an episode where Hurley fixes a van. Let's have an episode where they go golfing. Let's actually spend time with these characters. A Netflix show of 10 episodes can be paced really well and really direct and get to its point and have no fluff. And there's something really satisfying about that, especially a show like Mad Men, which is a show that, you know, each episode really matters, has a real weight to it. And it just, it's an AMC show, not a streaming show, but I stand by it. Whereas there's room in Lost for like a hangout show. When Lost is not committed to its mythology and to its plot, it can have entire episodes where it's like just chilling out with these people, man, having fun with them. And that leads to bad episodes. Like Jack's Tattoo is a terrible episode of television. But it also leads to episodes where when something bad happens to somebody, it hurts more because you spent 24 to 48 episodes getting to know them and spending time with them and getting to know little details. I feel like I love shorter TV seasons. They help with pacing, help make episodes that matter. But I also miss this last hurrah. Lost is the last hurrah of the TV show that you watched for 24 weeks and felt like they were your family. Game of Thrones characters, not my family. I love them, but not my family. Lost characters, my family.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
I do not envy both of you and your profession for the amount of content that comes out. And it's like, here's the whole season. Hope you have a review ready. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot. And at doing that and watch, there's just with the glut of shows that we watch and glut of new streaming shows, new TV shows, we are grateful for that shorter episode span. But for something like Lost, I don't know if it could be created nowadays, because that hangout show, the the idea of just being with these characters and getting to know them and letting them do really nothing doesn't exist anymore, I don't think.
The X-Files HG, what happened to the Monster of the Week episode? I missed like when Mulder and Scully could solve a mystery and we enjoyed it, and then we went back to the mythology of next week, right?
Yeah, and like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, for example, also Monster of the Week, but with a big serialized arc that you get back to, but you don't have to. You can have an episode where everyone turns, where all the adults turn into teenagers and,
right,
and mm-hmm. mug everyone. So it's something that doesn't exist anymore. And when you have something like that, it in a streaming show, it can completely throw the show off its momentum. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. remember the Stranger Things season 3 episode where we just stop? Was it season 3? Yeah.
Was it season 2?
Season 2 episode where you just stop and see, hey, what's Eleven up to, and her mutants,
yeah.
her X-Men parallels. And it stops the momentum completely. I feel like if it were a prime time show where you had more time, then maybe that would work, but it just completely threw the show off its momentum.
Yeah, Stranger Things is paced so weirdly because it feels like it's in a hurry while being on slowdown at all times. Right. Yeah. I feel like if Stranger Things was a 24 episode series and there were standalone monsters and standalone events, it would actually would strange enough be paced better if they had triple the number of episodes.
Yeah, you're right. It feels like they're stretching out a little bit, like 3 episodes worth of stories into 8 episodes.
I was going to a viewing party for the season premiere of season 2 of Stranger Things, and I picked up my friend. She got in the car. It was 4:00 in the afternoon. She said, "I already watched it." I was like, "Did you go to school? Like, what? What do you do? That's all you do." So,
just watch it between classes.
But it's also like, I'm thinking like, I'm sorry, I'm an old man.
No, you're good.
But Star Trek Discovery, a show I really like, but that crew is not my family. They're too busy doing plot stuff. They're too busy running through corridors, solving plot. Whereas the Next Generation crew, man, I had fun with them. They're my guys. I get to really get to know them. And I feel the same about Lost. The Lost people, they're just... I have my TV families, and one of them is Lost, one of them is Next Generation crew. And and I genuinely feel that's because when you have 24 hours of television to fill, you have to make sure these characters are intensely likable. You have to want to spend so much time with them. Whereas another show, The Sopranos, a show I love, but those shorter seasons mean Tony Soprano can be a horrible monster every episode because you want to spend 24 episodes with him. But Jack and Claire and Charlie, you need to make sure that they are just people you want to be with at all times. So mystery aside, and throw away all the stuff about polar bears and smoke monsters and time travel, Lost is ultimately like a massive cast where every character was somebody you didn't mind spending time with. And that's something that is, I miss that a lot in a more plot-driven streaming age.
Yeah. Everything is plot-driven nowadays. I think it lends to the whole immediate release of all the episodes thing, because people want to get to what's the next thing that happens in the plot. It's less about finding out what happens to these characters, but it's more about finding out what happens in the story. And I feel like something gets sacrificed in that interim.
So I did want to ask both of you, because we have you on and you have your awesome show, Trekking Through Time and Space, and you guys were trying to think to Star Trek and Doctor Who sort of being linked together as sort of like compassionate sci-fi. Do you guys see the compassionate sci-fi elements from those shows in Lost?
Oh, yeah. Lost, in the end, is a love story. It's many, many love stories, and that's what I take away from Lost. I think many people take other things, but the core essence and what I always came back to for Lost was the romance and love stories and the deep emotional connections that all the characters had with each other. It's no surprise that my favorite episodes of Lost were the romantic Pidgeon ones, The Constant, which I think is one of the all-time great episodes of sci-fi TV. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful romance told through this timey-wimey structure. flashes before your eyes, through the looking glass, greatest hits. I love that kind of emotionally driven sci-fi. I think sci-fi can be a very cold and very high-minded type of genre that needs to then be brought down to earth and grounded by the emotional stakes that you get from romance and other types of deep personal relationships, but romance is one that I always come back to. Jacob?
Well, yeah, Lost and Star Trek are the same show. They're about cooperating on a place where everything can kill you. Spaceship versus an island. Lost is about building a civilization in the face of chaos, and Star Trek is about preserving a civilization in the face of chaos. A lot of people who worked on Lost, you know, are people who grew up watching Star Trek Next Generation and Star Trek Deep Space Nine. You can really feel that in the shows. Deep Space Nine in the serialization and the willingness to take these characters into dark places, and Next Generation in understanding that at the end of the day, hangout vibes make for good television. And Star Trek Next Generation is the most hangout vibes of all Star Trek.
It's funny that we've mentioned like why I have like a list of like the best pilots ever made, and Lost is number one, or it's like one of the best, if not the best. Mm-hmm. Expensive too. Star Trek The Next Generation, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Well, what else did we say?
Do you think Next Generation's pilot is that good?
I think it just sets up like, here's the show and you're getting it. If you don't like it.
HG has not seen that yet as part of our podcast, so I won't say too much, but
okay.
I disagree with you there, Brent.
Okay. No, I mean, I definitely can see why people be like, I mean, this is not the best episode, but it definitely to me goes like, all right, I know that this is how we're going on.
Mm-hmm. Is Friday Night Lights on that list of best pilots?
Oh yeah, for sure. Okay. Mr. Robot is on there.
Mr. Robot is a show I think you should watch, Jacob.
I couldn't get over the title. I'm like, it's called Mr. Robot. Why should I watch it if no robots in it? And now I know he's kind of great in it, but I'm really allergic to Rami. I'm allergic to Rami Malek. He's such a terrible actor.
He's really good in Mr. Robot though, and his specific brand of weirdness fits the Mr. Robot character very, very well. He doesn't play Mr. Robot, but his character in Mr. Robot.
He is human Ambien in the Little Things. He is the most boring actor alive. His Freddie Mercury is an embarrassment.
Bad. His Freddie Mercury is bad.
Well, when we get to our Night at the Museum episode, we can have Jacob talk about how much he hates King Achman-Ra as he plays in that movie.
Yeah.
I have never seen those movies, so they slipped right by me. They came by out at the age where I was like, I'm too good for this, even though I don't know if I am. So,
yeah, I do. I was going to say, because the thing I like about Mr. Robot, which I kind of like about Lost, is how artistic it is. It really feels like a lot of the episodes are like, well, we're going to do them over our artistic vision. Of course, Mr. Robot is pretty much 90% like written and directed by the same guy, where Lost even does like, you know what? All of the flashbacks are in Korean, you know, things like that. They're like, I don't think a single network TV show would have done that or would still do that to this day.
Yeah, they took a lot of swings, and that pilot is famously one of the most expensive pilots until, you know, now when Netflix spends like millions of dollars on their shows and Amazon is spending $70 million on their Lord of the Rings shows. But yeah, it was, they had to haul in a real plane to do that. And it was very, very costly, and it paid off. What a great pilot. Again, one that, yes, you see exactly what it is from the beginning, but it also leaves you with so many questions about what's going to happen next. It's intriguing and gives you just enough information that you just want to know it more.
Mm-hmm. How good is it that the first pilot episode is called Pilot? It's about a pilot. It's the rare pilot episode that like, is called Pilot. Like the first episode of Sopranos, for example, it's called Pilot. I'm like, give it an effing title, guys. Come on. Yeah. Whereas I love that there's a joke there of Lost being called Pilot. It's real good. It's real good. Real dumb. Yeah, I know this is an audio podcast, but so you guys can't see this listening at home. Sand from the Lost Beach.
What?
On my desk. So.
Oh my God.
Wow. You went there?
I didn't. A friend did. But you can literally go to that beach and walk on it, and it's not a big deal. But I do. I've had a little glass jar of Lost sand on my desk for 10 years. So.
I'm
going
to go and get that. I'm going to get that.
I saw an interview on Conan with Yoon Jung Kim, and she was talking about how, yeah, we filmed it on a public beach. So like, if you like slowly moved the camera over, you would just see a bunch of like actual surfers in Hawaii. So it's definitely, yeah, I guess they give Lost tours, I'm assuming, if it's in Hawaii. Yeah.
I guess those surfers must've been the ones driving the outriggers that were never resolved.
Did you give that jar to your friend and you were like, hey, if you would you mind just giving a little bit of sand for me?
Or my was it friend something? Brought jars for my entire high school watch group. We were in college at the time. They still brought them for like seven or eight people. So
that's sweet. Yeah, that's a friend to the end.
Yeah, for sure. It's also interesting because I it's watching other Lindelof shows like The Leftovers and how he's doing Watchmen now, and kind of seeing how Lost is like kind of in, like I see it a lot in The Leftovers, like you can see sort of the same elements throughout a lot of his later work, especially into his HBO stuff.
Yeah, I feel like the rough edges of Lost make it really interesting, and even that final season, I think Lost is more interesting in retrospect for having a bad final season. And as somebody who is, you know, tries to approach pop culture from a historical standpoint, like, you know, same way that the bad James Bond movies are really interesting 20 years later when they're like rotten in the moment, you know, like Spectre will become fascinating in 10 years, even though it's, you know, not great now. Right. Lost is getting that way for me, where I have no anger toward that final season as much as I don't like it. But at the same time, so many of the big overarching questions that Lindelof and Cues, to be fair, kind of belly flopped with and Lost, I think they pay off elsewhere. I mean, Cues has gone on to make, you know, Bates Motel and other things. He's a steady, dependable TV guy. He makes solid shows that people like, and then he moves on to his next one. Where Lindelof takes these massive swings about faith and hope and love and all that stuff. And all that stuff. What am I? It's like they pay me to write, not to speak. But it's The Leftovers is all of Lost existential despair filtered in a way that, from somebody who's grown up a bit, and Watchmen even more so. Watchmen's a guy who realizes, I have this endless creativity. What happens when I put myself in a room full of all kinds of different people and really listen? And I think that maybe Lindelof's most underrated aspect as a storyteller is that his willingness to collaborate. You read any thing about the making of Leftovers and making of or the making of Watchmen, it's all about how he chose to listen. And I think that, you know, maybe if he had listened during Lost, he would have had a better final season. I digress. I think that there's no one more empathetic making television right now. He truly is an empathy machine.
I'm sure he was listening during the final season of Lost, maybe listening to too many people and too many things, because there's a lot of stuff happening in that final season that if he, you know, stuck to his gut, maybe it wouldn't have happened. But I will admit that I haven't seen The Leftovers yet, and it's one that I've been wanting to get around to and I need to get around to. My friends who have been urging me to do it for a while have said that it's basically what I loved about Lost that's honed and tweaked in a way that's even better than it was when Lindelof was first playing with those concepts. And I saw some of those ideas too in Watchmen, especially in that the idea of love, like sort of cosmic love transcending this kind of time-space continuum, and him playing with that in one of the best episodes of Watchmen and doing that again after Lost. And I think that at his heart, Lindelof is a romantic, which I really enjoy, as well as being an empath machine. So I'm excited to see. I like that he grows with his works and he's always trying new things, but at his core, he really loves these very specific values that I am very, you know, also very warm to. I really love that kind of stuff that he also loves to explore. So
yeah,
big fan of Lindelof.
I will say that his work became truly outstanding after he deleted Twitter. He famously got roasted daily for the Lost ending and roasted daily for the script for Prometheus. And one day he quits Twitter and without social media around him, he makes Leftovers, he makes Watchmen. So I think the key here, we should all delete Twitter.
Yeah, I was about to say. All right, everybody on three. We're all going to delete our Twitter. No, I'm just kidding. But one thing I think that's interesting is also because the show came out around the same time that like the birth of social media was coming around. So a lot of it, you know, the speculation like you guys were saying is about the forums and the and fans coming together. But it didn't have Twitter really when it was coming out. So you wouldn't have people going nuts over sort of the ideas. And Facebook was just MySpace was kind of a lot where the forums and stuff were happening.
Yeah, well, I mostly just hung around the Jeff Jensen recaps and read all the comments there. I think I was on the IMDb forums at that time too. I was really into the IMDb forums. Wow. And that was just like those areas. So it was like a very specific communities of people before IMDb became a huge like beacon for trolls. It was uh-huh. like people who just liked movies and TV. And so that was nice. So that those areas for me were good places just to talk about loss and talk about those things. I never was on, I don't know if it was Reddit was around that at that time. Those places I found communities that I liked and theories I liked, and there wasn't as much hatred, I feel like, because just really they really want to know what's happening in the show. So I guess I got to avoid the negativity because of that. And because the outlets for people voicing their disdain for a show were less than they are now.
HG, were you, because you weren't on darkufo.blogspot.com. That was the place for outrageous lost talk and lost theorizing. It's, I'm looking at it right now. It's still being updated. It's still like,
wow.
Whoever runs it is still updating this ancient looking website with news loosely related to people who are involved with the Lost family, like Josh Holloway and JJ Abrams. And so that's a good darkufo.blogspot.com. But man, I was, that was the place, this hideous looking website with hideous looking fonts where it was just everybody posting all the wildest stuff. That's where I hung out online for my Lost fix.
Yeah, I was a mostly an internet, not newbie at the time, but I was kept under a careful watch by my parents, and they were like, no weird internet, no weird websites. So I stuck to the pretty, you know, mainstream sites. It wasn't until I started watching Game of Thrones and got into like winterscoming.net and a Wiki of Ice and Fire forums that I got like really deep into forums and stuff. But back in Lost days, I was just, you know, on the EW with comments.
The only time my adult life where the experience of watching Lost was replicated was during the first four seasons of Game of Thrones, where I would just watch it week to week, go to the winterscoming.net forums and just read everything. I read those books. Yeah. And I'm actually a final season defender of Game of Thrones. I don't hate it. I think it's not great, but it's also not the train wreck people say it is. I feel very strongly about this. But I will say that Game of Thrones being a very expensive HBO show was the only show in this modern age that could replicate what Lost was, and the only thing to give me that feeling, because things have been splintered so much that we're all watching 1,000 different things instead of, you know, watching the one or two big great things. And I do wonder, I know HG earlier said Lost was the end of an era, but I wonder if maybe Game of Thrones was the actual last gasp of what Lost created.
It was, I will say it was the last gasp for me too, but then it fell off so quickly. I stopped watching Game of Thrones after season 5. And up until then, I believe that Game of Thrones was the show to replace that Lost itch, that water cooler moment of week to week viewing and just getting into the forums and getting into the theories and stuff and reading all the books. But then the show, you know, diverge so largely from what I liked about the story and the characters that I just stopped. But for a brief shining moment, yes, it was the last gasp in that shared, you know, pop culture moment.
I was just gonna say real quick, I think the like something that's similar, it's not really the same, but I don't know if you guys are watching like the MCU shows, but they come out week to week now. And so then some of them are like the WandaVision show and the Loki show.
Yeah, Disney kind of wrapped in kind mystery. Of helped that, yeah.
Yeah, but and so you kind of have these weekly, you know, the revealing of information and people speculating. And because there's the comics, they get really into like, oh, they're maybe going to do this arc from the comics and they're going to bring in these characters. But even then, I think it's nothing like what it was once with Lost and
WandaVision got pretty close to that, actually. Yeah. I remember WandaVision reminded me a lot of the kind of mystery box storytelling that Lost did. But it was for a much shorter amount of time. But WandaVision almost reached that. It felt, because of the week to week release, it also kind of built that up too, which I enjoyed. I like that. I was like, oh, I missed this. I don't think, it wasn't as big as Lost was. But And people are so spoiled nowadays.
After
WandaVision came out, people were like, why didn't they just release all the episodes? I'm like, you guys just appreciate this weekly release as it is. Like, we're talking about this for more than a month now. It's not just gone after a week. And WandaVision became like such a big thing that they brought it back on talk shows. Like, Catherine Hahn blew up, and that was so exciting. We won't get that if there was a weekly, if there was a 1 week binge session, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the greatest thing Marvel Universe has ever done was make Catherine Hahn to a household name. I mean, let's face it. But in all seriousness, I'm very busy. So having to finish a show on a weekend is horrible to me. Two, I like talking about this stuff. The reason why this is my career, working on a movie and TV website, a pop culture website, is that I like to spend my time luxuriating in things I enjoy. And I hate, having to binge things. I mean, I like binging things I've already seen, but for the first time through, like taking your time. I mean, on our own podcast, HDR, watching Star Trek and Doctor Who one episode at a time, sometimes 2 a week if we're recording two. But the amount of time I'm able to like really think about Doctor Who, as opposed to I could have watched all of it by now and be all caught up, but then we've been a blur. Which episode is that? Whereas now I know each episode's title. I know who directed it. I know when it came out. I know what part of the season it was. Mm-hmm. Not binging things makes you into an actual fan. And not I love that because I'm a fan, but a fan isn't somebody who genuinely appreciates the highs and the lows and understands what it means to discuss what you love and understand why things you love occasionally hurt you, why they occasionally don't work, but why you do love them. And when you binge something, you can so instantly and quickly write off that kind of stuff. When you watch it week by week, you have to grapple with, why do I like this? And that question defines what pop culture conversation should be. So that's my speech.
And it makes you a better fan, because not only can you appreciate and luxuriate in things you like, you can also... criticize the things that you don't like. And fans don't always have to universally like a thing that they like. They can also acknowledge the shortcomings, and that's good. You don't have to like everything that you like. It's fine to dislike some things. Fan culture, as much as it's fun, you don't have to be all gung-ho for one thing. And I think that the week-to-week thing makes you a better fan in that way, because you can just take it all in at a little bit at a time.
And when shows take risks, it's like you have to accept that can be a good thing and a bad thing. So it's,
Yeah, I think you guys kind of just summed up why we do our show is very much, that's what we love doing, is just kind of deciphering what was the 2000s pop culture and, any show, any... We've done iPods, how does that changed us so much? And so seeing how much it changed. I don't miss, which is now happening on YouTube, is that if you type people in like, all right, WandaVision, and then every video is like, WandaVision explained.
Yeah.
What you missed in the last season of WandaVision.
The issue with that, Brett, is that WandaVision explained is the SEO term that is gold. Like, we had this last one, right? Explain post. Because if you want your stuff to be seen, you write something, something explained. And Google gives you the nicest little head pat. And lots of people visit your site or watch your video, and it all works out. It's a system that that no one's happy with, but that's unfortunately the one we've made.
Right, exactly. Five things you missed about Lost. Well, one thing I did want to mention about Lost is one thing I kind of don't like, and this was I watched a video by Mashable about it, is that like all the things are like the smoke monster, the others, like everything is so vaguely named. Some of it because they didn't know what they were doing, but also because they want to give that ambiguity to the audience, which I think is really interesting. That they just started listing things like, oh man, you remember the blue tree? And it started like listing more things, and everyone would be like, that might have happened on Lost, It'd be like, oh man, Jacob, remember the two-headed deer, season 3? That's a good one.
Like an X-Files plot.
Yes, it does.
But at the same time, I like that Lost was like, it's a smoke monster. We couldn't name. Once they started defining that stuff, once they started like saying, well, smoke monster was actually the sad boy from the island in the past. I'm like, oh, F you. So the more vague and mysterious you get, you just call them the others. You just call it the smoke monster. I love that. And I mean, I don't need the backstory for everything. It's like, I just want to make emotional sense. And Maybe I'm falling into an HG argument here, emotional sense versus logical sense. I still want my emotional sense to be satisfying and not involve a man pushing a wheel in a pee cave. I think that lost its naming mechanism in a storytelling rely on something very primal, rely on something very simple. I think people confuse simplistic with simple. Simplistic is the negative form of simple, whereas Lost was simple in the right ways. I mean, for all its complexity and all its mysteries, Lost was about men and women on an island trying to survive, and what is survival? And that is a question that the show asks over and over again. And I don't know, it's my long-winded way of saying I really like that it's called The Others.
Okay, yeah, no, for sure.
The Others.
Well, one thing I think that's also, this is sort of diving into this a little bit, I think that Lost did that I think has maybe happened at like Comic-Con or some other places, but they did these alternate reality games. Did you guys know about these things?
No, actually.
So it was a marketing campaign that was designed to unite Lost fans from around the world into an alternate reality game that they developed as sort of a spinoff for Lost, which was working closely with the creators and the writers behind Lost. So essentially what it was a combination of like TV advertisements, fake websites, call centers, blogs. They made the Apollo chocolate bars and they sold them. And all of it would like lead you into more and more clues. So for example, like there was a TV ad and it had a phone number. And if you dialed the phone number, it would send you to a website. If you got the source code for the website, it would send you to like a GPS in like somewhere in the world, which had like something that you scanned. And it was like this crazy thing that all felt like the Hanzo Foundation was like trying to find you or something like that. And I'm like, why haven't more shows done that? Because that is awesome.
Ah, yes, the beginnings of viral marketing. I remember that was really big, and Lost was, at the forerunner of that. They did that with some Christopher Nolan movie, I feel like.
Oh, they did it with a lot of Christopher Nolan movies in the 2000s. I remember vividly sitting in a computer lab in college, rapidly refreshing this page, because every time you refresh this page, another pixel from the first look reveal of Heath Ledger as a Joker would float off.
I remember that. Oh, I remember that too. Yeah. I remember that. That was a huge day. Yeah. Everyone was refreshing that
Everybody.
Page.
It was wild. Everybody was so mad. Everybody was like, what is this? He looks so terrible. I hate this. And like, history. So.
Yeah. I guess it's not as much of a thing anymore, but yeah, that kind of viral marketing. And it was so extensive too, because it was in show as well. So they had the Apollo chocolate bar, they had these clues, so you could feel like you're part of the show. I never did like the full scavenger hunt thing, but I remember that. And I remember like that aspect and I was really appreciative of that. But they don't do that as much anymore. I feel like if shows or platforms did, people would just kind of key on to the fact that it's a marketing stunt and they're like, oh, we don't want to do that anymore. But there was a lawlessness to the viral marketing of that age that made it feel much more just like part of the, like more fun and more organic, I guess, to participate in.
But HG, every time you hit retweet, you are participating in a viral marketing game.
Dang it. We're all doing it. I didn't even know it.
They've ruined our lives. They've turned all of that into our lives.
We are the others.
We are the others.
Whoa. That's the deepest thing I've heard all day. But yeah, also the other thing that makes I feel really interesting was before streaming that on ABC.com, they were had for like a 2 month experiment is that they had the episodes available online for free just to see what it would do for trial. And it ended up being like one of the things that helped bring it into, you know, such the big community that it was, that you could watch it on your computer for free.
Yeah. Very rare. Like back people think about watching things for free so easily now. It was hard back then. You said torrent things and then you had to worry about whether you would get a virus on your computer.
So I had to go to the student center in college and make sure I had a TV rented out, a TV cubicle rented out every week to watch Lost, because I didn't have cable in my dorm, and we couldn't stream things at that point. So I literally had to go like sign my name on a physical piece of paper once per week, you know, like a week in advance, and make sure that I had a TV locked down for Lost Day. So kids these days don't know. They don't know.
That's crazy.
I don't know the work we went through. We risked being arrested. We had to sign out TVs. Well, because, you know, they weren't tamping down on fraud as much. I mean, you always had that fear whenever you torrented or like pirated something. Don't illegally download things.
Yeah. it turns into a PSA. We had a fun time on Most Extreme Podcast tonight, but what we want to talk about is the FBI warnings on your VHS.
Anti-piracy laws.
Well, kind of just, I guess, as we're kind of slowing down to sort of the close, I did have a quote from Damon Lindelof about the ending and the finale of, like, what loss meant, which is, independent of whether or not you hated or loved the way it ended, it's pretty cool that people are still talking about it to this day and have strong feelings about it. That's the intention of any art, is to basically last. If it lasts, you're saying something, even if people are saying it's something they don't necessarily like. With loss, there's a fixation over the way that it ended. And I think that in of itself, that's very interesting legacy for a show to have.
Yeah.
That's a good way to sum it up.
Yeah. Loss is a great show. One of the best of all time. Bad ending. Doesn't change a thing.
Yeah.
He's right. We're still talking about it. And that's what makes art art, really. If you, if you get an emotional reaction out of anyone, whether it's a good or bad emotional reaction. And I just summed up what he said again. So.
No, yeah, for sure. That it's exactly what I think makes the show so powerful. It's really just the fan base. I think that's what made it so unique, is that it was the time it was coming out and the people who were so dedicated, who were really liking it. It's so unique, other than any other show in the 2000s, for sure.
It just came out at the perfect time because they were able to have the technology to do amazing things on screen. And it was not before. It was before, you know, like the streaming stuff really took off. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah,
and at the beginning of social media, when you would have that kind of crazy viral marketing and the fans and the people talking about it and even influencing the things on the show.
Right.
Paolo and Nikki and Paolo.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So miracle of a show.
Yeah. Any last thoughts, complaints, compliments?
Lost is good.
Watch Lost. If you've never heard of it, and you made it this through the episode. Well, HT and Jacob, thank you so much for coming on the show. I actually have a gift for both of you for coming on the show. It is the pilot script of Lost.
Aww.
Signed by the cast and crew.
Wow.
I have two copies of this for both of you guys. Yep. So I will make sure I get that to both of you at some point. But thank you for coming on the show. I found this on the I found this on the internet, so I'm not entirely sure how authentic it is, but I do have this for both of you.
Did it come with sand, Brett?
It was in a bottle and I had to like get it out. I did, the person I bought it off of accidentally sent me another script, which is again, I don't know if this is authentic or not, but is the Joel Schumacher The Lost Boys script. I have two scripts for the pilot of Lost, but I guess we'll just put it out there on our social media. You can contact us. It's at Most Extreme Pod on Twitter and Instagram. If you want this, it's yours. If your name is Chris Evangelista, I'm giving it to you for free. But yeah, so now we have a script for Lost Boys. It's now our next giveaway. But yeah, thanks again. Anything you guys want to promote?
We're at slashfilm.com every single day working to get your movie news and reactions things up. And also we co-host the Star Trek and Doctor Who podcast, Trekking Through Time and Space. How good is our Trekking Through Time and Space podcast?
Very good. It transcends time and space. And if you think it's good too, you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/trekkingthroughtimeandspace, where you can get bonus episodes, early episodes, shout outs, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you remotely enjoyed us on this episode of podcasting, you should absolutely go to your server of choice and all that stuff.
That's awesome. Alejandro, any last closing remarks?
I guess, I don't know, should we give it, do we know what next episode, next week's episode
is? No, we don't know what next episode is, okay. But stay tuned.
It's a mystery.
It's a mystery, yes, you'll have to figure it out. I'll just give out a bunch of numbers in a row and see if you know what the quiz is. But yeah, thanks so much for listening. Yeah, Twitter and Instagram are Most Extreme Pod, and if you have any questions, or if you want this Lost Boys script, email us at mostextremepodcast@gmail.com, and we'll see you next week.